Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, the 2nd of August, 2021. Yes, August. I know. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, hello.
Glad you're here. We have a number of questions for you later. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. Good to be here.
Glad you're here.
Sorry about my squeaky Ergo Rusts.
It's okay. It's okay.
It was the perfection of the timing of the squeak that really got me.
I did appreciate that. So today we're going to start with a little bit of news, I guess, that is allegedly not actually news. So Charlotte, this was a thing that you wrote up on Friday here's the thing that happened and everyone involved has said it never happened.
Okay, yeah, let's start from the beginning. So on Friday, the LA Times published a review of a book about Tesla called Power Play, Tesla, Elon Musk, and the Bet of the Century. Apparently, it's not actually a biography of Elon Musk. It's about the company itself.
Okay.
Cool. One of the bits that was kind of picked up on in the review right at the top was there was allegedly a conversation between Elon Musk, who founded Tesla, and Apple CEO Tim Cook. It was at a time where Tesla was not doing very well and was in need of, basically wanted to be bought. He wanted it to be bought, Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. And he apparently went to Tim Cook with this idea. And Musk basically asked, he said, look, you can buy Tesla, but I have one condition. Tim Cook, and it was basically, I stay. And it was, first of all, Tim Cook was apparently like, yeah, obviously, like, the Beats people stayed, obviously you would stay.
He's
like,
allegedly, no, is probably a better word than apparently, but
I'm CEO, I want to be CEO of Apple. The response reported in this book is F you from Tim Cook. Mm-hmm. However, which is funny, it's a funny story in itself. The problem is it seems to be one of those cases where never let a funny story get in way of the truth, because both Elon Musk and Apple have, you know, not only denied that this specific conversation happened, mm-hmm. but the story both men tell is that they have never met or spoken to each other, not about Apple cars, not about Tesla. They have never met or spoken, according to both of them. So Elon Musk tweeted over the weekend, Cook and I have never spoken or written to each other. There was a point where I requested to meet with Cook to talk about Apple buying Tesla. There were no conditions of acquisition proposed whatsoever. He refused to meet.
Okay.
And back in April, we may have even discussed it at the time, Kara Swisher did an interview with Tim Cook, and part of that interview he said he had never spoken to Elon Musk. He admired him, but he had never spoken to him. So the story from all parties who were meant to have been on this call was that it never happened.
Is that it hasn't happened yet.
But it's, yeah, so it looks to be an example, as I say, one of those examples of never let a good story get in the way of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I would do a little caveat here. That A, books have to go through some, you know, fairly significant levels of legal processing. I don't know, you know, the specifics of the publisher and the publishing process around this book, but, you know, most books have to go through some pretty rigorous legal checks. And just because some people denied something happened doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
However, As we've said, the two parties meant to be involved in this are pretty unequivocal that it never happened.
You know, I could see Tim Cook spinning it in a way, possibly, maybe, but I don't see him outright lying about it. But I very specifically do not see Elon Musk caring enough to lie about something like this.
I mean, the thing with lies is that you have to, if we're going to go down that route, is you have to see to whose benefit would a lie be.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like it would be to anyone's benefit in this case.
Yeah, if anything, Elon Musk would, to me, seemingly be more interested in poking Tim in the eye just to poke Tim in the eye than he would be in dispelling, like, you know, falsely dispelling a story like this.
Yeah.
And I say that because we have another story.
Yeah, I was going to say, talking of poking Elon Musk poking Apple or Tim Cook in the eye.
Yes.
He was quite busy on Twitter on Friday.
He really was. Yeah.
He's quite busy a lot on the Twitter.
And he tweeted, Apple App Store fees are a de facto global tax on the internet. Epic, as in Epic Games, is right.
And
scene.
And scene. And mic drop.
I completely disagree with Mr. Musk on this. I don't know. It is hard for me to imagine the world where Elon Musk thinks that he shouldn't be paid for infrastructure and services that his company is providing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's this global tax. And by the way, why is it not a global tax for Google Play to charge?
That's my question. Was why is it only Apple that is doing this? Especially because, as Apple is always the first to point out, Apple's not the majority of mobile OSs in the world.
And also, like, App Store and Play Store fees are basically the same.
Right.
Like, the top end fee from both stores is 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 15% now. I think that's.
I said, yeah, I said Apple, top end for
But the bottom end is also the same, isn't it? I say that because I don't actually know what the bottom end fee is on Google Play. But
yeah, the structures are the same. Because Apple doesn't charge, only charge 15% if for apps that make $1 million or less.
Yeah. Than a year. Yeah, we got the tiered system from that previously, I think. So
I think that was an instance of him just wanting to poke Apple in the eye. I personally categorically reject this whole argument that
are you suggesting that Elon Musk might be an attention seeker?
He's a pot stirrer. He's a pot stirrer more than he is an attention seeker, I think.
Yeah.
But regardless, the App Store has a lot of infrastructure behind it. It has Apple's, you know, essentially Apple backs the App Store with, like, its full faith and trust, and companies like Epic benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
And this argument drives me personally bananas that Apple is somehow wrong to charge fees. I just completely reject that, especially if you go back to the beginning of the App Store when it didn't exist. And when the whole curated thing was novel, and when the whole, like, getting people to trust the apps that they're downloading was essentially novel too. I mean, it just drives me bananas.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't quite understand it either. So I guess we'll see. I mean, we'll see how that turns out, because this is continuing to be a conversation. Regardless of anybody's stance on it, whether you're pro or con, like, we're not done with the App Store story, I guarantee it. But something else that we wanted to discuss. Yes, Charlotte.
Well, we're definitely not done with the App Store story, because we still have the formal, judgment from the Epic and Apple case to come. So
yes,
we've still got lots of fun with that. Oh,
we do. Okay.
And there will be appeals.
Obviously. Right, before we even get to that process.
Yeah, yeah, there's always, even that judgment isn't going to be the end of the story, because whoever the judgment is against is absolutely going to appeal it. So we did want to shift gears a little bit and talk about something different, and that would be sports, believe it or not. We would like to talk specifically about football, and that would be Charlotte's football, not American football. And we basically had a few questions about some of the things in the second episode of the second season of Ted Lasso. So if you haven't watched it yet, if you're worried about something being spoiled, then now is the time, Be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there. Go ahead and bail now. And the rest of us are going to talk about that episode. So, Brian, I know
come
you
back.
Had...
Watch it and come back.
Yeah, watch it and come back. Brian, you had some specific questions. I had the same questions. So I'm just going to let you talk to Charlotte about what we saw in the second episode. So,
yeah, I appreciate this opportunity, Charlotte. I just want to be the American who has, like, the British friend.
Hi.
Who can answer some of my questions.
Sorry, let me come up. Hi there. Welcome to the United Kingdom.
Thank you. I appreciate that welcome. So here's the deal. In this episode, Roy Kent, by the way, who's the actor that plays Roy Kent?
This guy
Brett Goldstein.
Goldstein.
Yeah.
What's his first name?
Brett.
Brett. Okay. He is genius. I love him to death.
Yeah, he's fantastic and a part of the kind of production, writing, creation team of Ted Lasso.
And I love the character of Roy Kent. He just delights me to no end. And that is certainly the case in this particular episode. So my first question is, there are some talking heads. He goes on to it again. Spoilers, everybody. Tune out right now. As Kelly said, I'm just one more opportunity. But he joins a talking head sports show, which are those common in the UK?
This is real. It's based on Soccer Saturday, which is the show Roy Kent appears on as a pundit. Is a real show that is on every Saturday during the football season.
Okay, that was my question: was whether or not the talking heads were real,
other channels have kind of tried to replicate the format, but this Soccer Saturday on Sky is the most famous.
Okay. Got it. Okay, so is that like all three of them are real?
The pundits that you see with Roy Kent.
All three of the people that we see on the show, in the show, are actual talking heads on the show.
Two of them are. So presenter Jeff Stelling, who, when you look at it, is on the furthest left, is very much real, very much does that job in real life. Yeah. One place on his right is Chris Kamara, a former footballer in the UK, also very much a pundit on that show. If you want a laugh, Google Chris Kamara, K-A-M-A-R-A, red card, and you will enjoy a very, very, very funny video. Now, then there is a not real character. And Kelly noticed that this cat, go on, I'm going to let Kelly take the credit for it because it's such a good spot.
I can't remember his name, but he is the lovely fellow who formerly coached AFC Richmond and was summarily dismissed by Rebecca in the first episode of the season, where she lists all the reasons that she basically doesn't like him. And one of them is because he wears inappropriately short shorts, which was part of why I remember watching him get the boot. He's
normally it's a two person show. Is that correct, Charlotte?
No, there's kind of often three, four pundits plus the presenter Jeff Stelling. How they set it up was entirely like it would be on a Saturday afternoon. It's so clever. They do it. We can discuss how they do that a couple of times in this show. Because in my review of it, I actually picked up, there's a little paragraph at the end explaining how accurately they've depicted a number of bits of British media in this series, and it's very clever. So that set is the real set, as far as I can tell, of Soccer Saturday. The premise is exactly the same. The only slightly different thing they've done is during Soccer Saturday, they would have live scores and action coming in. You can't show any of the action normally because you're not allowed to show live football in England or the UK between 2:45 and 5:15 p.m. Anyway, that's a weird law we have, but you can't show it on TV during those times.
Okay.
On a Saturday, because apparently no one would go if you did that. But so the setup is exactly the same. They would normally have scores and stuff coming in. We don't really know how the show is meant to develop. We just see Roy giving his analysis of a game that might have happened at, say, the lunchtime early kickoff, and using some very not television friendly language.
Yes, that was another question.
Yeah. was whether or not what Roy Kent did, which was to curse on live TV, if that was an issue. I mean, there are radically different standards as to what is allowed on British TV versus what is allowed in US TV.
So, yeah, I mean, so given that the show he's on, it would be on primetime Saturday afternoon, you obviously would not get away with swearing at that time. He might get away with it once, and the presenter makes a point a couple of times, that doesn't he? Jeff Stelling apologizes a couple of times for the language.
Yes.
So that, like, there would definitely, he would definitely have to apologize, and I can't imagine that in an ad break, producer would not tell him very quietly and but effectively to stop swearing, because obviously that's not okay.
Yes.
Well, here in the States, it would just have been bleeped.
Like, right. Yeah, I don't
even know if it's live, because it's not actually live usually.
Yeah, there's usually a few second delay in something like that, and then that way somebody can hear it and be able to do the bleeping before it goes out on the air. So that's what we have here anyway, to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, because you know, goodness forbid that someone actually hear language that the majority of people use on a daily basis.
Yeah. Heaven forfend. So the other, and that was noted, I mean, at the end of the episode, when Keely gets the email, it says like couple of language issues, but you know, and yeah, so yeah, like they did call that.
It's very clever.
I also thought it was funny that email was like technically like unsigned. It just said producer at the bottom, and there wasn't like, you know, Chris or like any sort of name associated with that email account. I just thought that was kind of funny. Like, who sent that? Like, what if it, you know?
You're probably right. I thought I saw a name, but
yeah. It was a great episode. And you had told me you watched it before, and you told us in the meeting on Friday that it was an improvement over the first episode. Mm-hmm. The first episode I really liked, and the second one was in fact even better.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. So, a couple of other things. First of all, before we move on from Soccer Saturday, there's another very clever bit that they do, which is when Roy Kent is phones Keely from the dressing room and he's having a bit of a panic about doing the show. Mm-hmm. And he goes, Jamie Carragher sent me flowers. I don't know if anyone will have picked up on this. Jamie Carragher is also a pundit on Sky Sports, who was a very famous player for Liverpool, who was a very tough tackling defender. And like, so that the joke there is also based on reality. And I think, and he like makes a comment that they were rivals and now Jamie Carragher's sending him flowers. And I think that's a little nod to the fact that Jamie Carragher regularly appears with another former player, Gary Neville, who they clashed quite a lot when they played and are now a bit of a double act on TV.
Interesting.
Got it. Yeah. One of the things I appreciate about Ted Lasso is that they don't, I mean, it's aimed, okay, I believe that Apple's largest market is in the U.S.
Must be.
And here's this show about, you know, this fictitious British football team. And, like, they don't coddle the American audience.
They
just present stuff as it would be presented, to me at least, it seems.
Yeah, and they've definitely upped that in season two. I discussed it when Jeff Gamet and Tom Merritt joined me to discuss the beginning of season two on Media Plus, how they have created a fictional reality show called Love Conquers All.
Mm. Yeah.
That's based on a show here in the UK called Love Island. It's the franchise other places around the world as well. And like a current footballer would probably never be on Love Island, but like they've literally done the background of Love Island. The setup is exactly the same.
Yeah.
When, again, spoiler alert, when Jamie Tartey's kicked off that show, he goes and does a breakfast TV show called This Morning, which is on a channel called ITV here in the UK. That's absolutely weird as well. That is their real set. The presenters that do the interview with him are the real presenters of that show, Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. Like, they're using real British bits of media. He appears to walk out what looks to me to be the actual ITV offices at the end. It's very clever how they're doing those little things, and they've mm-hmm. definitely upped it in season two.
Yeah, I remember you having mentioned that in season one it wasn't quite like that. I think it was the football announcing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a bit. those kind of things are definitely more in season one. Obviously, they have to, you know, as Brian said, we can be assumed that the biggest number of watchers of all Apple TV shows comes from the US.
Certainly.
And so there's obviously going to have to be some nods to that. But yeah, the bits they've made, like even the pub and the Richmond area, looks very authentic to me. Like, they've done that. And they did film it in London,
yeah,
as we know. So yeah, they've done those authentic bits. Very clever. And yeah,
so
there's a number of British writers on the show, and I think that's clearly feeding into it.
Probably helping, yeah. So we will inevitably talk more about Ted Lasso here on the podcast, because it is a show, as you may have noticed, that all of us enjoy. So that's going to do it for us today. If you have more questions, if you have football questions for Charlotte, we will take all of those at observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter or by leaving comments in the show notes. Thanks to Charlotte and Brian for being on the show with me today. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.